and get the meeting started. Apologize for being a few minutes late. We'll go ahead and call the meeting to order.
Okay. Councilmember Erickson?
Here.
Councilmember Jean?
Here.
Councilmember Klonowski?
Here.
Mayor Winston?
Present.
Councilmember Page?
Here.
Councilmember McGarvey?
Here.
And Councilmember Tran?
Here.
Mayor Winston, you have a quorum.
All right, wonderful. So it seems like a pretty straightforward agenda today. So there being no general information, we'll go ahead and jump into Blue Line Extension discussion, which will be led by Mark Culver, city engineer.
Thank you, Mayor. So we have a couple of slides to go through this evening to kind of catch you guys up on where we are with the project, but also to dive into some of the station renderings, and then also allow us to talk about some of the aesthetic details of the project. We'll also be touching on some updated cost numbers just to get you up to speed. So with that, I will hand it over to Ryan Krauser with the project team.
Thanks, Mark. Hi, everyone. Mayor and council members, I'm Ryan Krauser. I'm with Metro Transit. I'm the Assistant Director of Design and Engineering. I've been working on this project for about a year and a half now. And then I'm joined here with Michael Jeske.
Good afternoon, everyone. Council members. I'm Michael Jeske. I'm a landscape architect, and my focus is on the northern part of the corridor, primarily here in Brooklyn.
All right, so we got a lot of slides. There's a lot of big pictures on it, so they'll go kind of quick. We'll take questions as we go if you have them. We have some more detailed cost information at the back portion of this presentation, so there's some more detail back there. That's important that we get to that. So I guess we'll just get started. Today we'll talk about a quick project overview, we'll talk schedule and that type of thing. A little bit on design background. This is the second iteration of this project. It does look very similar in Brooklyn Park as it did in what we call Blue Line Extension 1.0. We're now on 2.0. We'll talk about stations and streetscape, the operation and maintenance facilities at the end of the line here in Brooklyn Park, and we'll talk funding as well. So the Blue Line Extension, it leaves Target Field downtown Minneapolis and it terminates at the Oak Grove Parkway Station in Brooklyn Park. That's very near the Target campus. That is also where the operation maintenance facility is. If it were drawn on that map, it would be just to the left and to the top of that circle where it says Oak Grove Parkway. So it's 13.4 miles, 13 stations. There was a station added during the missile consent process in Minneapolis. That is the West Broadway station down in the lower right corner of that map. So this is a one-seat ride to the airport, to the Mall of America, to downtown. And then downtown Minneapolis, you can transfer to the Green Line and then go to points such as University of Minnesota, the Capitol, and in St. Paul. This project has a large focus on anti-displacement and community prosperity. I'm sure many of you are aware of that work that's been happening for years now. On the right, we have a little bit of a summary of some of our schedule items. The supplemental draft environmental impact statement was published last year. We went through the missile consent process last fall, and we're currently working on 60% design level plans. So we're not quite there yet. What you see here is getting to that level, but we're not quite there yet.
I'm sorry, what does 60% design level mean?
That's a good question. You must not be an engineer.
Fair.
So think of this as a journey. When we start, we're at 0%. When we go out for bid, we're at 100%. So the missile consent drawings that were published last year, those were about 30%. Okay. So we're about another level of design. So we have a lot of information on utilities, a lot more information on grades and slopes and retaining walls. So it's just another level of detail. Later this year, we hope to publish our final environmental impact statement and receive a record of decision from the Federal Transit Administration. And then we're looking to finish designs in 2026 and go out for bid shortly thereafter and start construction. The slide is that exact stuff in a different form. So the design process, as I mentioned, the project went through municipal consent, so that was approval by all four cities in Hennepin County last year. It concluded in August of last year, at which point we had some design revisions to make, and then we've been working towards that 60% design level as we talked about. We're also beginning the cultural placekeeping design work with the community. That work is coming out of the anti-displacement work. We're excited to kick that off here this spring. We have been asking for community members to join working groups. If you know anyone who's still interested, there's still time to join those groups. And then we'll be headed, our other milestones for engineering, 90% and 100%. So again, just adding level of details, the specifications start as well. And those are looking to be completed in 2026, next year. Mayor, Councilmember?
Councilmember McGarvey, Tony McGarvey. So what does a working group do in this context, and who are you looking for to sure. make that up?
So the working group, we call them cultural placekeeping design groups. So members of the community who have a lived experience in the community and some connection to one of the cities along the corridor. It can either be along residents, business owners, any sort of experience within the corridor. And we're working on designing station elements and other streetscaping elements, which make visible the cultures in the corridor. So it's someone who might be used to creating things. We're not necessarily looking for artists or architects or landscape architects, but people who are interested in helping create visual things. Now we have professionals who will actually execute some of that stuff eventually, but we're looking for ideas, looking for people who represent different cultures and can kind of explore culture and history throughout the corridor.
Thank you.
Sorry.
What? No, I was just saying thank you.
Related to that, from a timing perspective, you know, you referenced the different levels of plans. At the 90% plan level, will we start seeing some of the details of that being implemented into the plan?
Yes.
Okay, so we'll see that sometime about a year from now.
And we'll be out in the public. The idea is that we'll do some design work in these working groups. We'll come out to the public to show our work, get feedback, and kind of build that over the course of the summer and the fall. Do you want to take this slide?
I'm happy to take it. I'm able to kind of talk to some of the background because I did work on that first phase of the Blue Line work back in the 20-teens. We're excited to be back with you and share with you how the design is carried forward and how we're taking a fresh look at it. That process, at least that I was engaged in, really kind of kicked off in about 2014 through 2018. At that point, it paused because of coordination about the alignment. It's continued to simmer. The demand for an interest in the community has kept it moving, and we began to work in it more earnest again recently, as you know. There were some other interrelated processes that really informed design at that point that we are really trying to honor some of those key pieces of input, but we want to reaffirm them with you as well. Back in 2016, there was stationary planning that was done in all the communities along the corridor. Stationary planning is a little bit different from design in that it was focused more on areas outside of the corridor or nearby. So it often involved projecting how development or redevelopment may occur or pedestrian bicycle paths that extended beyond the immediate corridor. In addition, there was a design document that's called the Streetscape Framework Manual. This really delved more into detailed design, it was conceptual in nature. We'll share a couple of those early images with you today so you have a sense of the flavor of those. Began to explore options for different urban design and landscape features that could help create a vital and interesting and attractive corridor, primarily along West Broadway in between about 74th Avenue extending up to Oak Grove Parkway, which is a long stretch. This went through a lot of engagement with city staff and county staff. We call that our design refinement team, as well as community engagement along the way. And during that process, a lot of focus on design, but we were also always being mindful of the cost estimates that went hand in hand with that, and verified how cost participation worked between the various project partners.
So some of those early concepts that Michael just referenced, on the left is the 85th Avenue station. What you also see there is some proposed potential development that comes out of station area planning. So it doesn't look like that today, that work was looking at multi-story buildings coming closer to the streets. On the right there is an overlook that is still in the project in a slightly different form. That's over at Chinook Creek. On the left, a multi-use trail with a privacy fence and some landscaping. Then on the right is the Grand Boulevard up near Oak Grove Parkway and the Target campus. Big vision of what the future developments could be up there. Okay, now we're going to take a step. We're going to walk through each of the five stations. We're going to start on the south end at 63rd and work our way up. We'll end up at the operation maintenance facility. We have a couple of early renderings of that facility. I'm going to hand it over to Michael to kind of walk through this. But each station has an animation kind of walk through here.
Yeah, so this is 63rd Avenue. We're at the intersection of 63rd and Botanical Boulevard, County Road 81, where the existing park and ride is. That's the structure you're seeing on the right of the screen now. You see that the LRT track will run down the center median of Botanical, and you're seeing the station, which is comprised of those three canopies and the platform where the trains parked. There'll be an overhead pedestrian bridge that's weather protected, connecting parking structure to the station medium, as well as improvements to the at-grade intersection crossing there to facilitate safe access to the station as well. When Ryan showed you the first map of the station locations, maybe just as you know, a subset of that, there are five stations planned in Brooklyn Park. The first is 63rd here, and that's on the Botanical Corridor. As the route continues north from that point, it does shift over and then follows the West Broadway Corridor. From about 73rd and then going north. For each of the stations, we have a couple of different views here, a simple site plan and then a street level view to help you get a little bit of sense of what it's like to have your feet on the ground and the character of the surrounding area.
I'll just add, the stations here are very simple. It's basically what we call massing, so it's where that level of detail we talked about will come in over the course of the year or so. So they're not made out of giant chunks of concrete.
Are there no arms anywhere?
Sorry?
The arms that come down, are there none at this site?
Mayor, council member, you're referring to the gated crossings of railroad, crossing of roadways. We do have, so the freight railroad has existing gate arms. So at 63rd, that will remain as it is. But since light rail's in the middle of County Road 81 and West Broadway, there are no gate arms required in those situations.
But once we get to 610 and then the LRT moves over to the side again, then we would have gates at the intersections. So north of 610 at the intersections of the future roads, north of 610, there would be gate arms at those crossings.
Okay, so here's Brooklyn Boulevard.
Yep, perhaps it goes without saying, but there's also a significant amount of roadway and trail construction that's part of the LRT project. So at Brooklyn Boulevard, you're seeing the main intersection here. A lot of focus on enhancing the intersection itself, making safer pedestrian crossings. Those kind of slip turns that you would see out there today are no longer. Those are becoming sidewalk space. So you're seeing the station in the center, median of the roadway. It's got two access points, there's egress in two locations. We're also illustrating the character of the streetscape on both sides, and we're putting a lot of focus on the block and the intersections that are immediately around the stations, implementing features such as boulevard trees, street lighting, planting beds, and some furnishings at the corners. You saw there those oval shapes, really trying to create a really attractive walkable environment nearby the station there. This is a quick plan view. In each of these plan views, north is to the right, just to orient you as you go through. The colored areas indicate generally the right-of-way and the work that the project has been doing, and then the surrounding areas are existing land uses that will remain, such as the car dealership, the lower part, and some of the businesses that are in the Starlight Center, and the Target and so forth, up to the top of the image. This is a view as if you were standing near the trail on the west side of the corridor looking north. So you're seeing a widened path. That's one thing that you would notice driving down the corridor today. There aren't continuous sidewalks or trails. The project will be building continuous sidewalks and trails the entire length of West Broadway there. This also provides a view of one feature that's important. We really want to encourage people to cross at the designated crossings. We're implementing some features to deter people from crossing the block, getting onto the track where they shouldn't be, and putting them in harm's way. So that center feature Ryan was gesturing at with the hand there is a concrete knee wall with a metal railing on top is intended to guide people towards the intersection. Continuing north, this is 85th Avenue. So you're seeing the college, North Hempstead Community College, in the lower part of the slide there. We're rotating around the main intersection. You'll see some similar improvements in the sidewalk and corner areas. Planters, some limited use of special pavements to add something a little bit more than basic concrete, as well as some planting beds in the boulevards. And the trees provide shade along the way there. 85th Avenue is a little bit different from West Broadway in that it has a secondary crossing that's not at a full intersection. That area there, which looks a little bit like a Z shape, is a type of a crossing that's intended to safely cross people across one direction of travel at a time, but then have them turn and make their way across the tracks and kind of orient themselves towards the direction of travel. There are also active indicators and signage to help people across as well. Want to be mindful of all people of all abilities, whether they're walking, riding, or going.
Yeah, these secondary crossings are very similar to what's on the Green Line in St. Paul along University Avenue. It's a nice way to keep people focus on what they're doing. You can see that here in plain view on the left. You can kind of see the Z shape.
One other feature that I point out here is that since the LRT is running down the center median of West Broadway, we will have some adjacent areas between the track and the roadway lanes, where we're looking at implementing a decorative band and aggregate treatment. It's a difficult place to get and maintain. It will undergo a fair amount of stress from the surrounding roadway traffic. We think that'll be an attractive treatment that'll have used consistently along the edges of the track throughout the corridor there.
This is a good time to mention that the train is powered by electricity, so there are poles and wires above the tracks. So in the area that Michael mentioned in the median, that's not a place where trees can live and grow and survive, because they just get too tall and get into the wires, and our maintenance people just come and like trying to, you know, it's pretty ugly. So we're conscious of those safety elements, and that's why you'll see the majority of the trees on the outside of the roadways.
Here's a view at street level of one of those pedestrian crossings. Really provides you a good sense that it's a generous path. Probably up there are 10-foot wide paths. As you can see, we're going to be providing some amenities that help the community make connections to stations like bicycle parking or some seating areas for rest stops along these paths as well. Continuing on, this is 93rd Avenue. Very comparable layout to the past two stations at Boulevard 85th, where the station is located in the center median, just south of the intersection here. There are some unique differences here, though. Different land uses around, the commercial land uses around here are more industrial and larger single-story buildings, parking lots out front. As you can see, there's a pond that's proposed in one quadrant of the intersection. The church is here as well in the southeast quadrant you're seeing there. This is also an area, maybe to point out another distinction, where there are some overhead transmission lines that will remain. Ryan's kind of pointing to those on the west side of the corridor. So those will be relocated to make way for the path, but they'll be put back in place. Well, we need to be mindful of that when we design the streetscape, because that poses some limitations on the height of trees and other types of features that we can do in those areas. Yes?
Quick question. All these are, they're beautiful renderings, but this looks like an engineer's dream. It's all very utilitarian. What about art, creativity? I see some greenery, but there's no placemaking in any of these, really. Is that going to be incorporated in?
It will. And as Ryan was alluding to, we hope the placekeeping process will help us kind of understand some themes and things people are interested in that could be incorporated and enhanced in these features. For instance, the one opportunity might be that concrete knee wall along the edges of the station. That could be a different color. It could have a texture on the outside that it might be graphic in nature and kind of make each station area a little bit unique to each other.
So is money allocated for placemaking or art for any of these stations?
Yes.
For the installation of maintenance, or does the maintenance become the city's?
Yes, so this cultural placekeeping piece is part of the project budget. That's being led by us through help with the community. So it's not art, so we're not hiring public artists to do this work with us. So there's a little bit of distinction there. So while it's not technically public art, it will be community-inspired graphics, wayfinding, imagery, that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah, I ask about that because I know like Aldo Moroni has art along the whatever line it is that goes through parts of Minneapolis. There's public art, actual artists who are engaged.
Yes.
Is that not being done because of the cost and maintenance associated?
That is not being done because the federal government no longer contributes for it. It's not eligible for the federal project.
Got it.
So it was cut.
Money.
It was cut. The federal government cut that out of the program as Southwest Light Rail's under design.
Okay.
And it's just an unfortunate piece.
Yeah, because it's beautiful. Okay, thank you. It helps to know.
Well, they'll probably be painted about 3 weeks after it's open.
Yeah.
invite
the neighborhood to design it.
Just to refresh, we were saying that at the 90% plan level, we'll see some details of that. And I expect we'll see those elements both incorporated into the stations themselves, and as Ryan was saying, maybe in those strips between the rails and the roadway. But we also have an opportunity maybe to get some elements. If you go to the overhead view, we may see some elements in the corners as well to really enhance those and make the individual stations different from each other as well. So mm-hmm. So there's a recognition of where you are too.
Thank you.
So then the cultural placekeeping design process that's being funded through, I think earlier you mentioned the anti-displacement fund, correct?
So the cultural placekeeping that we're doing is part of the project mm-hmm. scope and cost. The other anti-displacement work is outside of the project. There's parts that are inside the LRT project and parts that are outside mm-hmm. the LRT project. This is squarely in and okay. McQueen. So this is another animation. What you see here is, so the park and ride structure for transit parking, we are under review of where exactly that lives in this block. Some of you might remember when we came last year to the council, we had a discussion about that. That is currently under review with staff, and we'll bring that back when we land on an option or two for consideration. Surrounding that parking structure is future potential development. So that's just a placeholder to look and feel and scale, but that, of course, is future development. So, then the station is here, it's side running from the street itself.
This area north of 610 is quite different, or will be quite different than it is today. As I noted, there's a significant amount of roadway reconstruction that's planned here, and we're looking to capitalize on that with some unique amenities like the wider green median here that provides some walking paths, some stormwater treatment areas, as well as some opportunities for recreation nearby. One of our goals was really to make an enjoyable walk from the surrounding development that is planned in this area to the station itself. So you're kind of getting a glimpse of that as we kind of go around the edges. City staff have been great beginning to share with us some of the planning going on in this area, so that we can be mindful of that and integrate it well on a number of different levels. This is another location, actually. You see the plan, there's a thin line, thin black line right down the middle. Another location where we need to be mindful of a pretty significant transmission line. But we're going to be working with Excel to relocate that and accommodating it, but also making space for recreation and an amenity underneath that, not letting it dictate how that space wants to look and feel. These are a unique kind of intersection design. When we began designing this, we looked at a lot of precedents, some other ones in the metro area. They might be familiar with Summit Avenue, which has a wide median. That green median there is about 160 feet wide. So provides a generous area to utilize in different ways. As Ryan was pointing out, the track configuration is a little bit different in this location. In between 93rd and this here, the track does switch over to the west side of West Broadway and kind of runs along the periphery across 610. Where Ryan's gesturing the track curving heading towards the west, that's where it begins to follow Oak Grove Parkway. Terminates the proposed operation facility. So Oak Grove Parkway is really only partially built today. There's a portion of it that allows you to get to Target Campus. But from West Broadway to the west, it'll be extended all the way to 169 there and kind of coincide with about where 101st Avenue is today.
I just wanted to quickly point out, the concept that, like Ryan was saying, that this is, or Michael, I can't remember who said it now, but this is like Summit in St. Paul. But one interesting thing that I wanted to point out is these are one-way pairs here. So this is West Broadway splits into a one-way pair. So this is southbound West Broadway. This is northbound West Broadway. And one really interesting component of that is in order to reduce the stacking that occurs in between the intersections here, the left turns, if you're heading northbound on West Broadway and you want to turn left onto 99th Avenue here, you actually depart prior to the formation of this median down here, and you go over here, and you sit here, and you wait to make that left turn, and then that way you're not queuing in the middle of the intersection, waiting for that red light. So it's a little weird, so it's a little odd, let's say, but I think it'll have some really good operation. Once people get used to it a little bit, it'll work out a lot better than some of the issues you see in that Summit area there.
Thanks, Mark.
Are those lights there in those in between?
Yeah.
So let me ask this. Not that I like them, but why aren't roundabouts there? They seem to be the thing now.
I would hate to put words into the project team's mouth, but I will. Signals actually operate a lot better with the preemption that is going to occur with the light rail line,
yeah.
The operational light rail line, and then the arms coming down and things like that. Trust me, I'm a huge fan of roundabouts, and I hope we see more in Brooklyn Park. And I hope we don't. I hope that doesn't bother anybody, but it does operate much better with the signals and the light rail. So.
No, that makes sense.
I can't
yeah.
see that being a good thing.
No. No, I have to drive through a couple of really weird ones every single day. And I'm like, who designed this? They're the only two in the state that I've seen that way. Rice Street, both on 36 and 694.
Gotta go all the roundabouts.
One roundabout, get out.
That's
and then
a tough
go,
one over there.
Yeah, you got to go through like four
right.
to get like anywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Go to Europe, Tony. Get over it.
Been there, done
that. Then you have to be on the other side of the road.
So Oak Grove Park and Ride, so back in the former project we developed the architecture of the parking structure, so that's what you see here in the center. It's largely designed with glass, masonry, and metal panels. So the white is metal panels, the glass is obviously glass, and this darker color is precast concrete with a nice texture to it. So. We're looking to carry that forward as we kind of reshape and reform the parking structure a little bit. This is the other side, so you can see some perforation of the metal panel and the entry court here for the vehicles. Another shot of the Grand Boulevard looking towards the station. You can faintly make out the trains here, so this is at the southern end of the Grand Boulevard looking west towards the station. Our operations and maintenance facilities. I'm going to go back. So as this track turns, this is the beginning of non-revenue track, so no passengers ride the train past this point. This will go for another 1,000 feet or so, and then it'll turn into the parking, the operation maintenance facility. So we'll see that right here. So north is to the left now, apologies. So that track connects in right down here on the lower left corner of the site plan. This is a facility that has what we call yard track on both the south side of the building and the north side of the building. So the building's in pink or salmon color. The functions here are train storage, train wash, and train maintenance. So this this bar of the building up here is where the trains sleep at night. Along that is our office space and conference rooms, locker rooms where the operators and the mechanics come, have their meetings, and then prepare for the day. The center portion here, which is a little bit skinnier, is where the maintenance pits are. So that's where the trains are maintained. And then this long section includes things like the car wash, the train wash, we call it a car wash, train wash, a body bay for fixing the body of the trains, and then place where the trains get sanded. Why do the trains get sanded? The trains carry sand to put to drop on the rail when it gets slippery, icy, or slippery, so it gives traction between the steel wheels and the steel rail. So we'll have a sand silo embedded into the building to help with that function.
And just for reference quickly, on the top of that, of the building there is Zylon Avenue. And the intersection there would be a realigned Oak Grove Parkway and 101st Avenue, running kind of the diagonal there. So just as a reference point of where this is.
And just really quickly, there's a multitude of sustainable design features here. We're following B3 and SB 2030, which are architectural standards for green buildings. One of them has been developed by the state of Minnesota. The other one's a national standard. We're looking at doing integrated landscape, which means landscape that's drought resistant, can absorb stormwater, lots of stormwater management on site, energy efficient systems, lights, HVAC, heating and cooling, and then windows and durability. So here's a couple of views of the exterior. Again, there's a similar palette, a similar architecture of similar to the park and ride, a little bit different orientation and detailing, but it definitely has a certain familial representation.
Can you go back one or two with that one?
Yeah.
So on this map, south is this way.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
To the left. Yeah. Yes.
And so, I mean, many of us have seen the beautiful renderings of Oak Grove Parkway post-development, with Oak Grove being a walkable pedestrian type. But it looks like, if I'm understanding correctly, there's about a quarter mile of Oak Grove that will just be train track and maintenance facility here. Is that a correct understanding?
Not exactly.
Well, it'll be adjacent to the, so it would be behind, there would still be a walk slash trail there between that fencing. So there'll be a fencing there to kind of screen the tracks from it. But that just, but between, even between the, like the bottom, the lower left hand corner of that, where his cursor is, and go a little lower than that.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, even from that spot, the tracks are kind of outside, are outside of that fence line, but they're still next to and adjacent to a sidewalk and a trail. So there's still that pedestrian, and there would still be separation between the tracks and the pedestrian facility.
So here, the upper right, this is represent.
Yeah, that's a good representation.
Of what it would look like.
So there wouldn't be, but there could be development along Oak Grove Parkway, like pedestrian storefront type, but this would not be available for pedestrian storefront type. Here.
Correct. And that's the location of a future city park.
Okay.
All right. So yeah, that's definitely a good question about how that land use would confront that track. But that's all thanks to park between this point and the facility.
Okay. Thanks.
Are we taking questions from the audience?
I would say you just might want to add, there's also one access point that's there into the park. Hmm. Across those anticipated off Oak Grove Parkway that goes across into there.
Okay, so across the tracks and a vehicular access.
That
would also be pedestrian.
That's meant to serve that part that's there.
Yeah. And the train's going very slow here.
No, Kazu, we're trying to end it.
So who do the lighting details? I saw you have a multiple design here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So who are the one who choose?
Would
be the best.
We'll get there. We'll get to that slide. And we'll talk more about the lighting.
Can the public go into that?
It's partially up to you guys, I guess. Yeah, but there's costs too. But we'll get there.
Okay. Questions about what we're looking at. So this land right here, for the O&M facility and the park and ride, do those go out for RFP? Are they designed in-house?
So our design consultant will design it, and then we'll put the operation maintenance facility as a standalone construction package. So yes, that will go out for RFP for bid. I think it's public bid. We decided that. Yeah,
we're still. Determining what this delivery is of that, but they will go out for construction bids.
We have a prevailing wage ordinance in Brooklyn Park. Will this honor that?
We have prevailing wage on the whole project.
Okay,
so.
Good. So for design, it doesn't go out for RFP. I'm asking because we have a award-winning park and ride from Snow Rylick off 610, and it's beautiful. It's a really unique one.
So they're actually our architect for this.
Awesome. Then we're going to get a very beautiful facility.
Yeah. So this the design went out for RFP with all sorts of descendant business and workforce requirements.
Okay.
Years ago.
Couple questions. So the land underneath it, the county owns, the Met Council owns.
City owns this property.
We own this.
Correct.
So who buys it? We own this facility. Okay. How does this work?
Should introduce myself and apologize for being late. Nick Lambert, Director of Engineering and Design for the project. This property here is City of Brooklyn Park in this area mostly. Some of it is our charter for our parcel. Project would purchase that property from it, and then Metro Transit would own that facility, own the property of the underlying property of the facility.
Does that make it tax exempt?
Yes.
So we don't get any tax production from these properties, including the park and ride?
Including the park and ride there.
I don't like that. It's a lot of land. Okay. Does it have to be that way?
The size or that land?
Well, we have we've been trying to attack tax base, and these are both sizable plots of land. We are trying to increase our tax base, so having two very sizable chunks of land that then can't produce tax for us is a little stressful.
Yeah. I know in 1.0 when we initially put together the whole footprint and everything north of 610, we looked at a lot of different locations for this facility. It is at the end of the line, actually, quite a bit farther than the end of the line, but we've got probably about a half a mile of travel to get here, but that was based on the input that we've gotten from staff from the city, from the city, that let's push this property over there and then leave the rest of it available for most of the park space.
I don't know, I think we should put in Champlin. Thank you, I was going to say that.
I highly suggest we do
Champlin. And then, I just have a quick question too then about employment. So, how many people are going to be employed at this
the
site?
Facility? I worked on this the same facility for Greenlawn Extension. There's about, I think, 60 employees per shift, which includes mechanics, like I mentioned, the operators, the helpers, the cleaners, the supervisors. I think we generally have two shifts. I think the later shift is a little bit less, but that's approximately the workforce.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah. I would add, Councilmember, the parking structure at Oak Grove, we are working and talking with staff about having maybe a shared facility where it might have some private development parking in addition to transit parking. So there's a little bit of overlap and shared use there. That's obviously got to get worked through.
So if it's a public-private partnership, would that produce tax base?
It would on the private portion.
It depends on what the ownership is, but yes.
We can potential plat it and we can figure out how to make that work.
Yeah. We also require you to put it underground then, so we can use the land above it to put more development. So that we can actually put something tax producing. Because that's a big chunk of land and some of the last bit of land that we have left to develop. That's a little stressful to lose tax-based production. And I know it's substantially less cost effective, but is that a possibility that we look to do something like that?
We'd have to consider the water table. And also, building underground is quite a bit more expensive. That would be potentially challenging for us to do an entire parking structure underground.
And what about one level, two levels above ground, but put something above it? Housing or commercial or something that isn't owned by the county or Met Council, so we can produce tax on that?
It's a lot easier to combine parking with parking. We tried along the Grand Extension to mix private development and parking, and it was wrought with problems of getting developers to commit. They have to follow federal requirements as well. It's really, really cumbersome.
We need to explore it. The Nordic in the North Loop has parking wrapping around an apartment building.
Yeah.
So we could explore other options so we just don't lose substantial tax base. And I think that is something worth exploring a little bit more.
Sure.
To have you look at it again from last year, but we got a little bit of time, and I think we should find a better solution that doesn't just hurt Brooklyn Park. The light rail, we're all very positive pro this light rail development, but we do have to think about funding our city.
And I would encourage Tim to Community Development Director Tim Glider will jump in too, but I've been calling this the super block. Could you go back to that rendering that shows the whole block? I've been calling this kind of the super block, and the current plan right now is for the city to get ownership of that originally when we plat this whole area to, you know, form the new rights of way and then also combine lots for Target to make it easier for them to develop and things like that. But so it becomes city, and then we would continue to negotiate with Metro Transit on where that park and ride facility is going to go, how it's going to look, and things like that. And as we're doing that, it's possible that we may be talking to other developers at the time, so perhaps we can generate some synergy on something that's more cohesive than just, you know, kind of that standalone park and ride option.
And Mr. Mayor, if I could, I think this shared parking arrangement, especially with the vertical environment, is going to raise the base value around it too. So looking at the bigger picture, I think that'll raise the value and that return. And then in terms of what we've been talking about is how can you have two parking ramps side by side, top or bottom, that are owned differently, that we could work through that. So those are some of the detailed conversations we're trying to work through. Pros and cons to each, but we can make that work where technically there's ownership of part of it for the private development, part of that is ownership by the project for light rail, and so we maximize that tax base as well.
All right. Where are we?
Yeah, I think we're there.
Okay, so
now we're to the money portion of the conversation.
So we've got a few slides that try to break down design. It's a little more detailed design than we saw in those larger renderings. And we're in the middle of working through this, but we've identified what room extension costs, the city costs, and what could be shared costs. So on the left side, you can see the different elements that we're assigning. Pricing too, there's a few more that aren't on that list. But we're just gonna walk through this fairly quickly and we'll go back with your questions in more detail as needed. So keep in mind, red is city, blue is blue line, purple is shared. Kind of works, right?
What's crazy about the red? It works with the purple, yeah.
So this is a typical station site where Michael walked us through platform in the middle of the street, streetscaping, street trees, pedestrian scale lighting, decorative lighting, understory plantings. So you can see the different elements on the left. The project will bring a base level of design to every station. It's where that gets enhanced. Things like additional benches, additional trash receptacles, special lighting potentially, decorative concrete. I mean, that's kind of where the split becomes. So this is all a work in progress, but that's the kind of area where we're I'm just going to go to the next one. Here's a bit more of a zoom in. You can see more, I'll call them native plantings. I don't know if they actually are native plantings, but shrubs, perennials,
grasses.
Bike racks, you can see the pedestrian scale lighting in the middle ground there. And some of the different elements there. Here we're talking about benches and trash cans, recycling containers, bike hoops, a bike hitch. And then on the right, you can kind of see how, and this is just an example to do more decorative concrete. There's hundreds of different ways to design this. This is just a couple different colors with some scoring.
You know, and just to jump in here, if I may, I know there's going to be a conversation later this evening about trash, and that's a big deal right now. I just wanted to make it clear that at the stations themselves, Metro Transit will operate trash. They will have trash receptacles there that they maintain at the stations themselves. These additional trash and recycling receptacles are intended for the street level, you know, off of the stations, and that would be our choice where we want those receptacles, and then that would be our responsibility to maintain and empty and such.
A few more boulevard plantings again, and the privacy fence along West Broadway. That fence is being paid for the project.
Go back to the fence. So this the fence deserves its own meeting. It's a very complicated issue, and so we are going to come back to the council. Part of that is reviewing the history of what previous councils have talked about and decided, at least preliminarily. There weren't any votes on that, but there was a conversation about putting those fences on the private properties, giving the residents a couple of different options for the type of fencing, if they wanted a gate and some things like that, but then the property owners would be responsible to replace those gates, and there would actually be an ordinance created to establish that maintenance responsibility and the limitations on what they could choose. There are some complications with that as far as the project team paying for it and installing it on the private property. The alternative is to put it on the public property, and then it becomes owned and maintained by the public agency in the city. And there are pros and cons to both of those approaches. So it's something that we need to sit down with the council and go in more detail about, and have a discussion and make a decision. And part of that is reviewing the history of this and what has been talked to with the adjacent property owners in the past. So,
question, I guess, perhaps for Director Gladhill. Some of the neighborhoods have HOAs that don't even allow certain types of fencing. So I don't know if that's been looked into before going too far. And I don't know how many HOAs. My HOA does not allow fencing like that.
In Redding, where else?
Well, those are the two choices.
Right. Do we know right now, is it planned to be in the city right of way or a private property?
I think right now the preference for the project, the entire project team, is to install it in the public right of way.
Okay. So if it's in there, if it's in public right of way, obviously it wouldn't apply to the HOA. But yeah, if we were on private property, we'd have to go through their own HOA approvals if we wanted to attempt that.
Just something to keep in mind.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks.
Here's the lighting slide. I would say there's three different types of lighting we're looking at. I'm going to start down here at Botanil Boulevard, so around 63rd Avenue. There's an existing lighting design that we would copy and mimic around 63rd Avenue Station. The lighting on the left is proposed to be along West Broadway. We're not sure on spacing or style. Xcel Energy provides some level of lighting, and Mark maybe can talk more about that if we get to it, through a program. There's lighting that the city could purchase, and it's outside of that program. Pros and cons, aesthetics, there's a whole bunch there.
And very quickly, a lot of the corridor lighting that we have in the city right now is actually leased lighting with Xcel Energy. And the problem with that is after 20 years, the agreement states that Xcel replaces the entire lighting, whether it needs it or not. In our opinion. In their opinion, it needs it. But that's part of the lease agreement. And so we have to pay for all of the lighting again after 20 years. And then we're paying a monthly rate per light for power and maintenance of that light. We've been having some discussions internally about whether we want to continue that going forward or if we just want to own the lights outright, and that way we can likely extend the life of that. We're looking at some cost analysis on how much that maintenance would cost us, and the risk there is it all depends on how many knockdowns there are. You know, it's relatively low maintenance, particularly now that we're using LED lighting. You just can't account for the knockdowns that you would have to replace then. But we're kind of leaning towards wanting to own them on our own and not working with Xcel, because the 20-year thing, you know, it could be a whole new staff and you're not aware of it, signing your CIP maybe or something, all of a sudden whammy, Xcel comes to you and says, oh, you got to pay $100,000 to replace all of the lighting on this court. So we're looking at that, and we'll be looking at the cost for Xcel to provide that lighting along West Broadway, or if we, you know, had publicly owned, city-owned lighting installed along the court.
And then the third type of light is what we're labeling light spires, decorative lighting adjacent to stations, lots of opportunities with these likely a cost share here. Planting details, smattering of different overstory and ornamental trees, perennial grasses, shrubs, lots of things I'm sure you recognize. Seating nodes, right now we have two seating nodes along West Broadway that is represented to the left, and then the overlook of Shingle Creek. It's just a little bit of a respite along the path there. So. Okay, so these estimates are based on a 30% level of design. So they're still very early, so grain of salt. We're constantly updating these things as we get more in detail. The work we just looked at is under here south of Trunk Highway 610. So that's 16 million to 17 million. A little bit of a breakdown here. You can see some cost to underground, some power, streetscaping, trail, and some utility work. And then the work north of 610, if you want to kind of touch on that's inclusive of.
Yeah, the work north of 610 is the whole project up there, regional and county roads, but also included in there are some city streets, Rhode Island and 99th, and some of those connections would be included in that cost, as well as utility work, stormwater, regional stormwater would get constructed with the project and looked into it. So that kind of what makes up the bulk of that cost.
And just to highlight that is a share cost. So that $13 to $60 million, if it weren't for the light rail project coming through, we would still have to build those streets. We would still have to install those utilities, and we would be building that at a much higher cost to the city of Brooklyn Park and the property owners that will ultimately develop there. So this is a bargain at $13 to $16 million. We'll also, just scroll back up. The costs that are under review, we will be continuing to work with Metro Transit and more specifically Hennepin County on where we can share some costs for the undergrounding of the utility lines. So we can't underground the transmission lines, but we can definitely underground the smaller distribution lines that are on the wood poles. So we're going to be looking to work with Hennepin County on sharing the cost for that, sharing the cost for some of the streetscaping elements perhaps, but where can we offset some of those costs with some partnerships, some past experiences, maybe some credits that are sitting out there, some things like that. So.
I have a question regarding what you just say, the city own lighting. So then every city own within their territory, right?
I'm sorry, could you say it?
The lighting. There is the option, suggestion that every city, may own or install the lighting. So then every city within their territories, like Oak Grove, in that case, Brooklyn Park own the lighting within Brooklyn Park territory, Oak Grove.
If I may, Councilmember Tran, are you suggested lighting districts?
You just talk about lightings, and
yep.
You think maybe the city should own, the lighting.
Yep, for the city versus Excel.
So
yep.
Then every city have its own territory.
Every city or every
yeah,
area?
Because
yeah,
because the light rail system go
yep.
through many cities.
Yep.
Not
yeah.
just Brooklyn Park.
Right. And each city will be responsible for the lighting within its own city, yes.
But that's just a suggestion.
Okay.
Not yet into decision yet, right?
Right.
Thank you.
So,
go ahead.
No, you haven't spoken.
No, I didn't know if they saw you. That's
okay. So then for the shared cost, when it comes down to the design, such as the lighting, all that sort of stuff,
how is that divided up between the city and, is it like the county by council? Oh, the Blue Line Extension
project? It's a project. It would be the project.
So how would that be divided up in terms of shared costs?
So here's a good example. So trees in the boulevard between the roadway and the sidewalk, the project will pay for a typical space in the street tree. It's 30 to 50 feet. If the city decides that they want more trees at a corner where there's a group of trees that are 10 feet apart and they're more concentrated, those extra trees would be part of the city's cost.
No idea.
Question. What did you guys list majority of the costs being from north of 610? What is it from again?
Yeah, for the city's share, Councilmember Zhang, we would be looking at as many different funding sources as we can. I mean, there may be some economic development opportunities, not necessarily EDA funds, but using some economic development tools, maybe even like TIF or something like that to help offset those costs. We may be able to apply some federal funds to some of those costs. Short of any of those, we would definitely assess those costs to the developing properties in that area. So, and that is the typical way in a developing area when a new street needs to be built to support a development or a water line or a sewer line needs to be extended, those costs are spread out over the benefiting properties and assessed for those developers to pay that.
Okay, so this $13 to $16 million is based upon the extensive development that's needed around Oak Grove Parkway, correct?
Yep.
Who's responsible for maintenance of the plantings?
Mr. Hoyt back there is raising his hand. That would be the city. The city would be responsible for all of the landscaping in this area, for maintaining that, and most of the aesthetic elements. Anything within the station area itself would be maintenance responsibility for Metro Transit. The railings in between the tracks and the roadway would be Metro Transit. But ultimately the lighting and the concrete elements, we would, I'm sure, work with Hennepin County on some sort of cost share, even for maintenance on those long term. But definitely the landscaping would be city.
I just noticed like some of these median areas or the corner planters or whatever, I've definitely been to different places and seen those quite ratty looking after a year or two.
Yep. And that's why it's very important that we involve our maintenance staff to make sure that, you know, we want to install things that look good and fit in, but we also want to find landscaping elements that are low maintenance as well.
Don't let it get ratty looking, Greg.
Give me the money when I ask for it.
All right,
I should ask. At one point in the 2016 design, and mind you, that was 2016 numbers, I had some very, very ballpark figures about what it would take to maintain that design. I do have to dig that back out and update it because there's been a lot that's changed in the economy since then. But maintaining it long term will not be cheap.
So then my question regarding to what he just said, do the city get funding for maintenance?
We'll do our best to come out as ahead as possible on the funding scenario, but ultimately long term we will be responsible for most of those costs.
Any further questions?
All right. So, I'll just ask from a general head nod perspective. Everything looked good as far as you're seeing. No red flags for you guys, obviously we'll be working very closely on the park and ride garage, we'll come back. We'll definitely be coming back about the wood fencing and that. But
I think I just want to emphasize Councilman Klonowski's point. We have very limited area for development now. You know, residents are concerned about the increase of taxes. And so our goal right now is to increase development, but then to benefit our residents as well, too, in the meantime. And so at the end of the day, I think it comes down to how is this blue line going to benefit specifically our city and our residents, because as of right now, as you know, my involvement with the entire displacement board seems like right now we are still kind of on the fence of even addressing displacement. And so I think within our city too, the increase of taxes is contributing to that as well too. And so we want to ensure that again, this development is going to be benefiting our residents. So I think I'm very much with Councilman Klonowski on this as well too, is that's the update that I would like to hear.
Yeah, I would just say that, you know, I know that with this train comes billion and billion and a half in development, and Brooklyn Park will get our fair share. I know that it will increase the value of property around it. But the more land that we as a city can own, the better. I think, you know, the other thing we always, I've been mentioning Bloomington, right? There's that $3.5 billion commercial property gap. So, you know, maybe even helping residents, because, you know, as a council, we're doing some of this, right? But I think just from, and I know we're talking primarily about design, but I think y'all letting people know that this is an opportunity for, especially along this corridor, for people to get some development that they have not had. To the displacement point, I would say that from a city perspective, it's going to be incredibly important that if this is going to create a certain amount of development, yes, we've got prevailing wage and other things, but how are we going to make sure that you know, women, POC, or people who have not had these opportunities are getting those opportunities? Because displacement, you know, my family's originally from Southside. I think, you know, people get nervous when talking about the Rondo area. There's other places across the country. They generally have a model where it drives through, right, and everyone gets displaced. And none of that wealth is shared with the people who get displaced or the communities that get displaced. So I think it's going to be important for not just us as a city, but I think our partners to make sure that people are understanding that there's going to be design in place so that as these opportunities come up, right, these communities are going to get this opportunity to actually build the wealth, because there's a ton of misinformation going around this BLRT, and we have to deal with a lot of that as a council. And I think helping people understand that displacement is a very real thing. However, right, here's how some folks can get opportunities that they have not gotten, and will put people much more at ease. I think that's going to be important. We don't need to get into the concerns about crime. I personally don't think people want to jump on a train and come out to the hinterlands of Brooklyn Park and just act a fool. But I think there's room for a further discussion to help put people at ease when it comes to that piece. But I think those are the major things that I have, is making sure that we help people understand it's a major value product. One second. Because, you know, there's this thing going around, people saying, well, let's put all this bus line rapid transit. I'm going to tell people, like, hey, bus line rapid transit, A, it ain't the sexiest when you look at it, right? Like, you go to Brooklyn Center, there's a huge one out there, right? So it's not as sexy as you think. It also doesn't come with $1.5 billion development. From a city perspective, I could dive into the details about how that development occurs to give you the $1 to $1.5 billion. I really don't care. I just know that it comes, right? I mean, I can dive into it. But from the high-level perspective, it's coming. How do we make sure that people get? And I think we need help from other people, from our partners, to help people understand that this does not look like, you know, your grandparents' displacement. But then it puts a little pressure on the cities to say, what do you have in place as a city to ensure that people are getting these opportunities as well? Because we have a lot of play here as a city, right? And I think that's going to be a further well, we need to start planning for it now, but that's going to be an important conversation. So.
I want to thank you for your presentation. It looked very good to us, but I just read some on the city Facebook today, conversation regarding this project, and I wish that I saw your information Twitter and Facebook. Can I refer people to go there and, you know, get answer from you, because you can convince people with different opinions with your presentation.
Of course, you can. Councilmember Tran, you can send them my email address and have them email me, and I can get them in contact with the appropriate people about this too.
Thank you.
So we have Councilmember Jung, then we have Councilmember Page, and we have Councilmember Harris.
Well, I just wanted to really emphasize the mayor's point as well, and then that also reminds me the importance of specifying what cultural placekeeping really means. I think that's why we had questions around the art, because we do have a very diverse city, and you know, this blue line, we are hoping that it actually emphasizes the diversity of our city rather than washing it out. And so I think cultural displacement is very real, and so that's the purpose of cultural placekeeping. But then within the specific project, what does that mean, you know?
Thank you, Mayor. I think that goes back to one of the points that I've been trying to work really hard on for PR for our city. Just in general, there's a narrative that is absolutely not fact-based. We have an amazing city. I raised my family here. And it's the same thing. Somehow, this has not gotten the PR that it needs. I've said it before, I'm going to say it over again. I want the PR team that did Kale and Tito's Vodka, because they made two things that are not very good, amazing, and profitable. So there has to be an, am I wrong?
Do we get some of that vodka?
I like great.
Do you like them together? Or?
Sure. But what I would say is, I'm laughing at myself, no. But my thing is, where's the energy behind that? I know we have a communications team, but where's the energy? What's going on with that? Because there's the PR team is not fulfilling. Yeah. No, go ahead.
I was going to mention, this just came up today with the corridor city manager groups and directors, of, especially in light of some recent legislative action and press. We need the project office to revamp their PR efforts. And we know there's firms out there that can supplement their team, and we can help all with that.
We asked 2 years ago, or 2.5 years ago, for this.
We'll carry that message back.
Well, and I would add that we're catching up. And we need to get caught up fast, because I still say, and I don't, you know, I put you through the ringer when I asked you questions. The bottom line is, I knocked on every single door in my district, and not one person was for this project. Whether they even know what they're talking about, I'm learning every single day. I can honestly say I know less about this and this city than I thought I did. After being elected and trying to dive in, but what I do know is it's a great city, it's a great opportunity, and if the message is not there, I caution anybody who relies on their decision making from what they see on a social media site, but I do think there's energy there within your abilities, or wherever it needs to go, or wherever we need to go with our experience. We're behind, and we have to catch up, because we need people on board for things like this, and I'm not convinced that we those things in place, because people are not for it still, and don't even understand that they don't get a choice. It's coming. Your words were really, really clear. It's here. But that was the only thing I really wanted to press, was the PR has to get going. The other thing is, can we expect a timeline for when we talk about things like routes, possibilities of express trains? When does that come to us? When do we learn more about that? Is that way down? I know this is just for design and all of that, so.
Sorry, Councilmember Page, you mean as far as like how, what level of service we're going to have?
Yeah, I mean, I know there's no express to MOA and the airport. I tend to think, because like I get discounted parking when I park down in the C ramp, so I'll park there, I'll grab the train, and I'll go to the airport. So it's convenient for me. I travel along a lot. It's really nice. I would love to see more opportunity for people from St. Cloud or from wherever north to come here and park for a discounted fee to get an express to the airport. I find opportunity in that. I think that business and recreational travelers bring a lot. I also think Marriott loves to put a three little spot somewhere where we can leave our car there for the entire, you know, Cancun vacation or whatever it may be. So I'm wondering, when do we hear about those opportunities? That's a big question. Are they being thought of? Is that something that might happen? Can we help navigate more sophisticated travel for an express lane? All of those things are of an interest.
Sure.
That's a lot. I know that. But that is all that I have, if you can believe it, for my questions.
Detailed response.
Yep. And how much is that program going to cost me? That's all I need to know. It has to be less than $12 a day. That's what.
$11.95.
Done.
So one thing I don't think you asked about, but I'll mention anyway. So connecting bus service, that's something that will come down the road as we get closer to opening this line. So we heard a lot about east-west connectivity through this corridor. Mm-hmm. That's something that's definitely down the road that will happen. You mentioned express trains. Yeah. I was just in New York. I've heard they invented the express train. That requires, in most cases, another track to blow by the station. I think if some of you travel, you've probably been in New York.
Yep.
That's not currently how we operate the light rail. Could we do that in the future? I don't know. Could we express and skip five stations in a crack? Maybe, but we don't do that right now. So there's no guarantee of that. As far as parking and then going to like this express parking, I don't know if we have a facility that does that now. I don't know if that's necessarily something that couldn't happen. I think we have a parking structure where we allow overnight parking. Most of our ramps are no overnight parking to keep people flushing the ramps to keep the spots available. But that could be something we could explore. I don't think there's anything prohibiting us from having overnight parking. Potentially.
But I also think, Mayor, we can, the council gathers up stuff and feeds it to Mark and Tim, various options. We're always happy to bring a team here to the council work session with some, you know, preliminary, here's what we want to have on the agenda. We'll do some research and we'll be able to tackle some of those topics.
So we're just really far behind for the commuter. It's really just not a commuter. We're just really young for that, right? If I understand that correctly, we're just...
When you say, you mean like the long haul, like express coming down? The system is designed to go station to station and serve, you know, four stops. Like someone coming from North Minneapolis to the college, or the hospital to Target Campus. I mean, those are primarily where we see our routes. But yeah, sure. I mean, I take the train from downtown to the airport out back. So it's a combination of those things.
How much weight are you getting to Target Campus? Because no one works there anymore. So how much weight is that with, you know, there's just nobody there. So, what have you revamped because of that?
Well, we go through a ridership refresh. We've done that twice now in the last year and a half or so. Yeah. So we're looking at the current demographics and workforce situation. So I don't have those numbers off the top of my head. I don't know. Nick or Dan, he's got those.
No, our hope is, when this light rail is open, that everything north of 610 doesn't look anything like it does today.
What's that mean to you?
It means housing, it means...
Okay.
It means whatever City of Brooklyn Park sees as, you know, from a tech campus to housing to retail, whatever city wants to do, that's a bright spot. And who knows, maybe those Target towers turn into something else. Maybe they stay, maybe Target says it's now called Congress. Who knows?
Thank you.
Sure, I just had one question and one observation. I was looking for the, last time everyone was here, there were maps of the route with kind of detailed how the route changes the neighborhoods. like where the old skate land is torn down for the road to go across 81 to Broadway, or where Jolly Lane was chopped off.
Right,
where,
right.
I couldn't find those on the project website. Are they somewhere else?
Councilmember Erickson, I'll send you a link to to those plans. They are there. They're a little tricky to find.
Okay.
But there are elements of that, and they have that those aerial views where you see, and they highlight some of the buildings that are being, that furniture building's already been purchased, but some of the other right-of-way impacts,
Okay.
I'll send you a link on that.
And then the other question, more of a suggestion or just something to keep in mind, is we move into the placemaking, and in some ways at a few of these stops, there's already places made. I mean, like if you go to Dragon Star Foods at Broadway and Broadway and Brooklyn Boulevard on a Saturday or Sunday, it's alive with that farmer's market sort of thing. So I think playing into what's already there, or Ebenezer being sort of the Liberian Vatican, there's something already there that's happening, and just paying attention to what's already happening there rather than trying to reinvent the wheel.
Our planning department is pushing us on that and trying to make sure that we do enhance connections between what's going to be there with LRT and what's already there, and what more can we do in some of those areas to make it even better. But that Dragon Star is one example of something we've had specific conversations about. So.
Yes. Well, thank you for showing. I guess I'll close out seconding what Councilmember Page said. I feel like with the communications piece, we are behind. And I honestly, in terms of cost sharing, right, if we, because our comms department is doing what they can, but they, you know, I don't know that they're staffed to run the type of campaign that needs to be run here. And I think they will admit that. They're doing a good job, and they've stepped up quite a bit, actually. But I think in terms of, you know, us funding it or other folks along the line, and then, you know, having our partners assist with that, I think that's going to be important. I don't think it should be something where you say, okay, well, cities, you turn around and you got to message this to your community. We're like, well, we're trying to message 100 other things to our community, right? So there needs to be something that's helping people understand the benefits. Even some of this, you know, gets caught up with what, so when you're saying what's going to be there, we want it to be biotech, right? It gets caught up with that, where people are just saying, well, light rail's going to come, it's going to all be density and this and that, and they're running with their own narrative. And, you know, there needs to be something where it's saying, well, hey, Brooklyn Park did not bring up, we never said a huge amount of density, we said biotech, right? Maple Grove and Champlin, God bless them, made it about something else, right? That's the Southern in me saying God bless them. But I will say that I think there needs to be some assistance there for us to just educate the community about this. So I think when we have, you know, open houses and we have people come for comment, that can be effective. But I also think there just needs to be a publicity piece on this, where we're meeting people where they're at, whether it's TV or newspaper or anything else, because I think what you're dealing with some of the cities along the line, for a long time, I'm trying to say this politically, for a long time, those local governments just were not as maybe aggressive as what we're starting to see as the line comes. So when I have Maple Grove and Champlin coming and saying, you should do this, right, which they never should have done, but when I have them coming saying that, it's because their government has been very involved in getting out the word about we're doing this, this is how it's going to benefit you, this is what's going to happen, and this is what's going to happen. When you're talking about some of the cities along the rail, including us, we have not always done that, and we're starting to do that. The problem is that we're going to need some assistance in terms of messaging and getting this out, because it's a new muscle for us to help people understand these changes that are coming and the positive nature of it. You guys didn't come here to hear all this, but when we talk about our city, the southern part and other portions, people are saying invest in that portion. There's not a lot of dollars laying around for this stuff. So development is key, so we can reinvest. Yes, we're getting tipped for some places, right? But it's helping people to understand that this is a big part of making your city long-term affordable to push down taxes. Because right now, the development just isn't there. So there has to be kind of a concerted effort to come together and say, hey, this is really what this looks like. And then to Councilmember Jones' point, right, when we talk about displacement and placemaking, yes, we know it has happened in the past. This is what this could be. In addition, that puts a little pressure on everybody at the table to say, this is how we make it work. And then the residents feel more comfortable. So I think that needs to be another discussion. I know y'all have come here, to hear the city of Brooklyn Park say, hey, let's put more dollars on the table. But I just think I don't think it's a huge ask, right? I don't think we're saying millions for something like this, but I do think there needs to be a more concerted publicity piece where people are beginning to understand what's going on. Because there's a separate narrative going out there, I think y'all have heard it, right? And it's very divorced from the reality of what's going on. And I don't think we just want to let that lie, because then people really believe, well, they just shoved it down our throats, right? And so we need to have something that is countering that, so people can come along for this ride with us, pun intended. So that's it.
Mayor, for me, that's a great takeaway tonight. Besides, these guys have all the design stuff, but for me, the takeaway is, now that we've completed municipal consent, now that we've kind of turned that corner and we're starting to advance this, how do we now turn that, what I'll call, what I've heard say, publicity, or just promoting the benefits that can come with this level of investment? When we're talking about Hennepin County having, you know, well over $1 billion invested, how can we help share that message to say, we're not investing this because we got nothing else to spend the money on. We're doing it because it serves residents, it serves people, it serves businesses. It helps promote those things. And so let's be positive on that.
If you could just put the unit of Brooklyn Park better than Maple Grove and Champlin, that will do a lot.
I'm okay.
We can put that actually in. Don't you have the advertisements inside the train?
Yeah. We'll submit some drawings to you.
How are we coming up to?
Okay.
All right. Well, thank you, Mayor. Thank you, council members.
Sorry, Sean.
Exactly. Oh, no, you're good.
Nothing to see here.
You're
good. Or how much is the bill?
I was wondering why you had so few snacks when there were some available.
I know.
Who are you even?
I know.
We'll give it another minute or two for Councilmember Erickson, and then we'll go ahead and start.
Good.
Backup version.
No, I think when he was, I think there's a little shit later.
That's right. What is the thing?
It is a thing.
Who are they by?
Well,
what's
going on?
Those are great. Or I'm hungry.
I think I'm smelling popcorn. Am I having a heart attack?
Don't feel rushed. They canceled next month.
I know better than
what
it was.
Stay in the
line. I tried that once. I don't want to do it.
But now it's the new one.
Do you remember when we
What's that?